Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for joining us. First up this week, it's Vincent Price as The Saint in The Saint Goes Underground from 1949. Then in 30 minutes, we'll hear The Calcutta Trunk Caper on The Adventures of Sam Spade from 1947. Now here's Vincent Price as The Saint.
The Adventures of The Saint, starring Vincent Price. The Saint, based on characters created by Leslie Charteris and known to millions from books, magazines, and motion pictures. The Robin Hood of modern crime is now transcribed for radio, starring Hollywood's brilliant and talented actor Vincent Price as The Saint.
Anything wrong, Captain?
Nothing serious, Mr. Templar. Just coming down here for a check. Go on just as soon as we can.
Oh, and where is here?
Headstone, New Mexico. Used to be a big silver mining town, but now it's just another little town, I guess. Although I did notice there's a carnival playing over on the edge of this emergency landing strip.
Well, how long are we to enjoy the hospitality of Headstone?
Oh, 2 or 3 hours. Long enough to see the town, have dinner if you like. We're sorry to delay you, sir.
Oh, it's all right, Captain. I'm seldom bored in a strange town.
Well, you better go back and fasten your seatbelt, Mr. Templar. We're coming down now.
Right. I'll see you later.
Well, good evening, Saint.
You know me? Yet I don't seem to recall your face.
Harry Kelly, and you don't recall my face because we've never met, but I've seen many pictures of you, and so I recognized you immediately.
Well, that's very flattering. Tell me, Mr. Kelly, how can I get into town?
You can find a cab on the other side of the carnival. Planning on staying long?
Not at all. Should I?
On the contrary, I was just going to suggest that I doubt if Headstone would welcome the presence of the Saint. Just a friendly remark, you understand.
Oh, naturally. And if I may be permitted a friendly question, why are you telling me this?
Just an interest in the continued health of my fellow humans. If you have any trouble in town, look me up. Anyone can tell you where to find me.
I look, the big show is just about to start. See little Fatima, the girl who shakes and shivers like a bowl full of jelly. Only one dime, 10 cents, the tenth part of a dollar.
See,
hurry,
Mother,
hurry, 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 step right
learn
up
learn what the stars hold for you. I read the past, the present, and the future. Learn your fortune, young man.
I already know it, Grandmother. I'm destined to meet a tall, dark, and beautiful woman. I'll settle for nothing less.
I see strange lines on your face, young man.
Huh?
I will tell your fortune without charge. Give me your hand. I see danger. Beware of a blonde young woman. She will bring you death.
There are worse ways of dying, Grandmother.
I see danger, much danger, for one with a halo about his head. Blood and death. Unless he travels, I see...
I think I'm beginning to get the idea. You might tell your crystal ball that I'm beginning to be interested. Goodbye, Grandmother, and may the saints bless you.
Taxi, mister?
Oh, thank you. Say, do you suppose you can drive me somewhere that serves a good dinner?
Sure. The Silver Dollar Hotel.
Oh, fine.
You know, I was just sitting there communing with nature about how many guys there are who blow their wad to watch some dame do a hula but won't spend a dime on a hack.
Do I detect a touch of Brooklyn?
How could you miss? That's me, chum. Ziggy from Flatbush. I used to drive a hack in Brooklyn. Now I own the only hack in Headstone. It's like, huh? You know, I ain't seen a Brooklyn Bridge for 10 years since I come out here for my health. Like I always say, it's a smart man who knows when it's healthy to get out of town.
Meaning what?
Does everything have to mean something? Me, I mind my own business. I stay healthy. That's why I'm living in Headstone instead of under one.
I see. But if you didn't mind your own business, I suppose you'd give me some advice about leaving Headstone. Is that it?
No advice, Mac. That's part of minding my own business. Headstone is a great place for strangers to visit, if they paid up their insurance.
Here you are, waiter. Very nice dinner. My check, please. No, thank you. Keep the change.
Hello.
Well, this is a surprising hotel. First a beautiful dinner, and then an even more beautiful blonde.
May I sit down?
Oh, by all means, Miss...
Betty Connolly. You're Simon Templer?
I should have worn my dark glasses. But now that the truth is out, you might as well call me Simon.
All right, Simon.
Now, how did you know who I am? Now, don't tell me that you were just passing and recognized me.
Why, Ziggy told me that you were here. He owns and drives the taxi here in Headstone.
I know I shouldn't look a gift blonde in the hair, but why did Ziggy tell you I was in here?
Well, Ziggy knows that I need help, and he thought, well, that is, since you're the saint, you might help me.
Well, I have been known to help beautiful blondes on occasion. But tell me why you should need help, Betty.
Someone's been trying to kill me.
Oh, there should be a law against that. Are you sure?
I've been shot at twice, and everybody here has been very unfriendly, except Ziggy and a man named Harry Kelly.
I've noticed the unfriendliness in this town, but being unfriendly towards you is obviously an indication of insanity.
Oh, please don't joke about it. I'm frightened.
All right, my dear. Now tell me about it.
Well, my father was known as Silver Slim Connolly. He lived here for years, but he sent me east to school when I was very young, and I didn't come back here until recently. My father died about a month ago.
Oh, I'm sorry.
He was broke, and all he left me was his old silver mine. He called it the Betty Mine, after me.
And I take it somebody wants the mine.
No, the mine is completely worthless. There hasn't been any silver in it for years.
But, my dear, you were shot at twice. Have you any idea who did the shooting?
No, but it might be the same man who told me to get out of town.
Oh, who?
Mike McCarthy. Ziggy says he's an eastern gangster who's been living out here for several months. Will you help me, Mr. Simon?
Well, I've never been able to say no to a pretty girl. You mentioned a man named Harry Kelly before. Just who is he?
He knew my father. He's been very friendly to me. Although he thought I ought to leave town, too.
I've met Mr. Kelly, and he intrigues me very much. I think we'll go see him.
All right. Just a minute. There was some red dust on your coat.
Oh, thank you. Ziggy apparently doesn't get enough passengers to keep his cab dusted. Did you say Ziggy was parked outside in his chariot?
He was when I came in. Oh, there he is.
Yeah, it's looking exactly as if he were back in Brooklyn. Hey, Ziggy!
Oh, so she found you, huh?
Thanks to your bird dogging, which I must admit in this case has done much to overcome any natural prejudice against cab drivers that I might have. Say, do you know where Harry Kelly lives?
Sure.
And let's go then. Huh? Hey, don't you ever clean out this hack? What's all this dust?
So who knows? Maybe it was that redhead that hired me yesterday. So she had dandruff.
Ziggy, you missed your calling. You're as funny as an undertaker. Well, now, Ziggy, I don't suppose you'd care to tell me why you warned me to get out of Headstone.
Got me all wrong, Saint. I wasn't warning you. I was just talking about myself.
And I don't suppose you'd care to tell me why somebody took pot shots at Miss Connolly here and told her to get out of town, too.
Me, I don't know nothing. Like I was telling you, Saint, I mind my own business. Maybe you stay ignorant that way, but it's healthier, and I like it like that.
And in that case, why did you send Miss Connolly in to see me?
Well, like you can see, she's a pretty little pigeon. She needs to know some guy will help her. Now, it ain't no secret that the saint goes around mixing in other people's business, so I tell her to see you.
And who told you I was the saint?
I got eyes in my head, ain't I? Like I said, I used to hack in Brooklyn. I got around.
What about this Mike McCarthy?
Strictly smart money, Saint. A lot of guys have crossed his path once, if you get what I mean.
What about Harry Kelly?
Local stuff. A nice schmo, but no more.
You're doing all right for a guy that doesn't know anything.
You got me wrong, pal. Ziggy, he looks people over, but he don't see nothing except one guy is tough, another guy is a schmo, and maybe another guy is too nosy.
I really don't think we should try to involve Ziggy, Simon. He's been very nice as it is.
Yeah, she's got something, pal. I ain't really equipped for it, because the way you're headed, only a saint could feel at home. Saint. Kelly lives on the first floor in the rear.
Oh, thanks. Wait for us, Ziggy. We've got a couple of other calls to make after this.
Don't worry, I'll wait. If you get in any trouble, just yell. Then I'll drive over and tell the sheriff I heard somebody yell for help.
Oh, thanks, pal. Come on, Betty. Well, I hope our friend is in and that he talks.
Yes. That's strange. Harry telling you to come and see him if you had any trouble. If he had any connection with me, then why hasn't he said something to me?
Well, it sounded to me like a cautious man. Maybe he did know something, but didn't want to say anything unless he felt sure something was going to be done. Well, we'll soon know.
Yes, who is it?
Simon Templar.
Oh, the saint. Just a minute.
Those shots were in that room.
This is no time for conversation, darling. We're going in.
Oh, but...
Like this!
Kelly!
Oh, Simon.
Kelly. Kelly, this is Simon Templar.
Templar. Saint?
Yes, Kelly, the saint. Who shot you?
The window. Saint. The mine. Sin.
Kelly. Well, Betty, he isn't going to tell us anything now. His killer did a very thorough job. Window open. Must have shot from here. There's a shell on the fireplace.
But what was he saying?
Sounded like sin. Come on, Betty, we're going to spread a little saintliness. And I think I know where to begin. Ziggy, didn't you hear anything?
Well, I noticed some noise, but like I thought...
I know. You mind your own business.
Are we going to the sheriff, Simon?
No, not yet. Ziggy, who's the assayer in this town?
Old man Matthews. The office is closed now, but he lives right ahead there. That big white house.
Okay, stop there.
But Simon...
I'd like to satisfy a little curiosity about that mine of yours. I'll be right back. You stay in here, Betty.
What do you want?
Mr. Matthews.
Who else should be here? It's my house, ain't it? What do you want?
My name is Simon Templar. I wanted to ask you if you know the Connolly Silver Mine.
I know every mine within 200 miles of here, young fella. Hey, ain't that Betty Connolly sitting up there in that taxi?
Yes.
Then why can't she tell you about the mine? She owns it.
Well, she has told me, but I just wanted to check about the possibility of a mistake. How much silver would you say there was in the Connolly mine?
About enough to put in your eye and still leave room for your finger.
Well, couldn't there be a hidden vein in it?
Nope. There ain't been enough silver around here to make a dime for years and years.
Could there be anything else of value in it?
Mud and water, if you call that valuable.
You sure?
Of course I'm sure. Young fella, I've been here man and boy for 70 years, and I ain't got no time to stand around answering darn fool questions. Goodbye.
Well, goodbye. Betty, you may be right. Old man Matthew says the mine is worthless, too. So, Ziggy, take us to see Mike McCarthy.
Are you sure you want to go there, say? If I was you, I'd get on that plane. It's leaving pretty soon.
No, Ziggy, I've decided not to leave Headstone just yet. Later, you can drive me over to Albuquerque, and I'll take the chief the rest of the way.
Okay, chum, it's your funeral.
Simon, please be careful.
Don't you worry, Betty. The Halo Wearers Benevolent Association would be very upset if anything happened to me. I'll be right out.
Yeah?
I'm looking for Mike McCarthy.
Well, you found him.
It's my Boy Scout training. It never fails. My name is Simon Templar.
The Saint?
I've been known by that name.
So what?
That's a very interesting question. I must try to think of an answer sometime. Meanwhile, I thought you might like to know that I heartily disapprove of your telling a certain Miss Betty Connolly that she ought to leave town.
What's the girl to you?
That's my business.
I could make it mine. And if I do, your halo's gonna slip down and start choking you.
I thought bullets were more in your line.
Meaning what?
Meaning the shots fired at Miss Connolly and a little gunning job only a few minutes ago.
I didn't do any gunning. But I'm liable to if you don't beat it.
You sound so sure of yourself, Michael.
That's because I got more in my hand than an itching palm.
That's a very pretty gun, Mike. But I'm very much afraid that nothing will satisfy my curiosity short of knowing why you want to get Miss Connolly out of town.
I got answers for nosy guys. Six of them. I just stand right there. Stay away from that desk, Saint, or I'll...
Don't worry, Mike. I have no interest in the desk at all. But I do have an interest in Miss Connolly! Now, Michael, I'll bid you adieu.
What happened, Simon?
Oh, not much, I'm afraid. The conversation was just getting interesting when Mike had a sudden attack of dropsy.
That's funny. I never heard of him being sick.
Oh, that's because you mind your own business, Ziggy, like you told me. Betty, where is that silver mine of yours?
About 2 miles out of town.
Is there any place in town where we can rent a car?
Well, why, I have a car. Why?
I feel a prospecting urge coming over me. Ziggy, take us to Miss Connolly's car, and then we can dispense with your valuable services.
What's wrong with my cab?
Nothing, Ziggy. It's just that I don't like people looking over my shoulder, especially when I visit a lonely mine in the company of a beautiful girl.
Well, here's the Betty mine, although I don't know why you want to see it.
Frankly, I don't know either. But as long as I'm here, I might as well take the 40-cent tour.
Certainly, sir. Right this way. This old cable car goes down into the mine. All we have to do is stand on the platform and pull the cable. It works with balanced weights.
Clever, these 49ers. How far down?
On the 40-cent tour, we give the exact distance. 354 feet, 6 inches.
Thank you. And thank you for having electric lights in a mine that hasn't been worked for years.
Oh, the mine has its own battery. See? Here's a bulb on the car. Shall we go down?
What are we waiting for? Let's go. Maybe the lights will go out.
Just hold it like that. I've been waiting for you two.
Well, Michael McCarthy, I was wondering if we were going to have your company.
And this time, wise guy, don't try anything.
Don't tell me, Michael, that you're going prospecting with us.
I'm riding down with you, but I'm coming back alone. Start the car down, Saint, but don't try no tricks.
You have a suspicious mind, Mike. Well, here we go. Call out your floors, please. Mezzanine, ladies' underwear, galoshes, and accessories.
You'll be singing a different tune pretty soon, Saint. You both had your chance to leave town your way. Now you're going to leave my way.
Oh, Simon, I'm sorry.
Oh, don't be, Betty. This is my first ride on an open cable car.
And it'll be your last.
I wouldn't be too sure. Unless that cable breaks before we get to the bottom.
What are you talking about?
Sucker! It's a little crowded here for a 1-2, so I guess a 1.5 will have to do.
Oh, Simon. How terrible.
There now, Betty. It's all right.
Oh, but Simon, it could have been you. He almost knocked you off the platform, too.
It was the padded shoulders in my coat. I felt them hit the side.
Oh, look at your shoulders. They're covered with dirt from the sides of the shaft.
Yeah. Huh. It's red dirt. Wait a minute. Well, we can go back up, Betty. Mike doesn't need our help, and I don't need anybody to answer questions anymore.
Simon, never understand you. Why did you look at the dirt on your coat and say you didn't need any more questions?
Because that dirt was red sulfide, Betty. And it explains why Mike was so anxious to run you out of town.
Well, I don't see how. Red sulfide is used in paint, but that doesn't make it valuable.
Red sulfide is also cinnabar ore, from which we get mercury, and that is pretty valuable. Evidently, your mine is rich in cinnabar, so it's worth a lot of money, Betty.
Oh, then that was what Kelly was trying to tell us when he said sin.
Yes, he was trying to say cinnabar.
How can I ever thank you, Simon?
Well, I have a couple of ideas on the subject. Oh, but now people would say I was chasing you for your money. So, I guess you can just see me off on the train. We'll stop in town and have Ziggy drive us to Albuquerque.
Oh, but I'll drive you.
No, I insist on taking a cab. I don't want you coming back alone. I may want to change my mind about fortune hunting.
Like I said, Saint, I'm glad to see you leaving. This town is just funny about strangers, but hadn't you ought to take Miss Conley with you?
But she doesn't have to go now, Ziggy, and besides, she's rich.
She's what?
Yes, Ziggy, we found out that Dad's mine is valuable after all.
You mean you found silver in it?
No, mercury.
Oh, the stuff they put in thermometers?
That's the stuff, Ziggy, but it's used for a lot of other things, particularly in wartime, and it's worth a lot of money.
Well, what do you know? So that's why Mike was trying to make you leave, huh?
That's it.
Well, did you stop and tell the sheriff?
We didn't have time, but I'll see him when we go back.
Oh, well, that's pretty nice for you, ain't it, buddy? Oh, here we are. Just in time, too. The chief's in already.
It's very nice timing, Ziggy. Thanks, Betty, for keeping my forced visit to Headstone from being dull.
Oh, Simon, Well, why don't you stay in Headstone? I won't know how to run the mine or what to do with the money or anything.
You'll learn, Betty. You know what to do when you get back to town?
Yes, but will the sheriff believe me? I mean, about Mike McCarthy killing Harry Kelly.
I don't think he will, since Mike didn't kill Kelly.
But
Kelly was shot with an automatic. He ejected a shell on the fireplace, remember? But Mike McCarthy carried a revolver. You saw it.
Yes, but will the sheriff...
Oh, the sheriff will believe when you show him that the gun that killed Kelly is in Ziggy's pocket.
What? What are you talking about?
You knew about the cinnabar ore in the mine. You carried some of it away to be tested in your cab. And there was red dust in it, which you tried to explain with a corny gag.
You're crazy.
Harry Kelly had an idea what was going on, so you slipped around to the back while we were at the front door and killed him.
All right, wise guy, you're so smart. What about Mike?
Mike was working for you.
But Simon, Ziggy told me that you were in town.
Sure, he couldn't be sure that I wasn't here to break up his little scheme, so the smartest thing to do was to get us together so he could watch both of us. He thought I would use his cab, as I did, and it would be easy. But he slipped up when he sent Mike out to the mine ahead of us. Ziggy was the only one who knew where we were going.
Okay, pal, you asked for it.
This time, sweetheart!
Like you said, pal, you should have followed your own advice about minding your own business.
Four.
Well, he's all yours, Betty. The gun that killed Kelly is now on the seat beside him. All you have to do is turn the body and the gun over to the sheriff, and from there on in, he'll mind Ziggy's business for him.
But, Simon...
Don't worry, Betty. I'll stop back someday to make sure that Venus is in conjunction with Mercury.
You have just heard another adventure of The Saint, the Robin Hood of modern crime. Now, here is our star, Vincent Price.
Ladies and gentlemen, how many times there have been men just like Ziggy led into crime by insatiable greed, forgetting the simplest truths so aptly phrased by John Dryden. Murder may pass unpunished for a time, but tardy justice will o'ertake the crime. This is Vincent Price extending a personal invitation to all of you to join us again next week at this same time for another adventure of The Saint. Good night.
Tonight's script of The Saint was written by Michael Cramoy. Our cast included Harry Bartell, Barney Phillips, Colleen Collins, Fred Howard, and Tony Barrett. The music was composed and conducted by Harry Zimmerman. The Saint is a James L. Safier Agency production and was transcribed and directed by Thomas A. McAvity. Don't forget that the Saint comic books are on sale at all newsstands. Your announcer, Merrill Ross. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Sam Spade Detective Agency.
Ahoy! It's me. Just came ashore.
From what? A boat?
A ship, Effie. A ship. Anything over 400 gross tons is a ship. Anybody knows that.
Well, may I inquire, what was your port of call?
Calcutta.
My, that was a quick trip.
Well, Effie, I'll tell you, I got so homesick for you, I couldn't stand it, so I assembled my gear and jumped ship.
Why, Sam, how sweet.
Faster, gal. I'll be right down to dictate my report.
Alive.
Bon voyage, Effie.
I've been worried sick. Where have you been?
On my way to Calcutta, sweetheart, where the dawn comes up like thunder.
Hey, what are you talking about? Calcutta?
And the flying fishes play. Ready, Effie?
Sam, why did you want to go to Calcutta, of all places?
I didn't, Effie. I hate Calcutta. I was Shanghai. To, Mr. Philip J. Fogg, purser, S.S. Lurine.
How do you spell that, Sam?
L-U-R-E-N-E.
Oh, that's pretty. Sam, how could you be shanghaied in this day and age? I mean, isn't it against the law?
Stow it, Effie. You're pumping bilge water.
Sam, I am not.
From Samuel Spade, license number 137596, when you have the time, regarding the Calcutta trunk caper. Dear Mr. Fogg, the following report will explain the enclosed voucher, which is a claim against your company for the amount of $500 and no cents. It will also answer any questions you might be asked concerning the recent unpleasantness on board your ship. It all started yesterday morning in San Francisco when my secretary announced briefly and caustically that there was a lady outside who wanted to talk to me. I judged that she was worth talking to. She was.
Your secretary let me in.
Well, I'm glad she did. What can I do for you?
I'm Marcia Hopkins.
I see.
Mrs. Marcia Hopkins.
I see.
However, my husband is dead.
I see.
It's about my sister that I've come to you, Mr. Spade. I'm dreadfully worried about her.
Who's your sister?
Miss Constance Pendleton. And she's become involved with a ne'er-do-well, a completely worthless scoundrel, and a real foreign bluebeard.
All three?
It's one man, Mr. Spade. A Bulgarian, Major Andrea Rodnik. They're going to be married this afternoon, and I'm positive that his only interest is in her money. I'm convinced that he's going to kill her soon after the ceremony. He's done it to other wives in Europe. I've warned Constance and pleaded with her, done everything I could to stop it. But she's completely infatuated with him and refuses to listen to me.
Mm-hmm. And what do you want me to do?
Prevent the marriage, if you can. Get the truth about Rodnik's background and face Constance with it. Oh, Mr. Spade, in some way, you've got to make her realize the seriousness of the situation. He's a ruthless character.
Well, do what I can, Mrs. Hopkins.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Spade. Oh, I've felt so alone and helpless until now.
Oh, really?
But you will do everything you can, won't you? We've got to save her life.
She daubed at her eyes with a stamp-sized handkerchief, patted the red-gold hair at her temples nervously, smiled at me bravely, and swayed out. By telephone, I learned that the Vrodnik Pendleton marriage license had been issued 4 days before, and that on the same day, Constance Pendleton had withdrawn a savings account to the tune of $45,000. I'd always wanted to, so I did it. I called at the Bulgarian consulate.
What can I do on you?
What do you know about Major Andrei Vrodnik?
Ha! Andrei Vrodnik! On him we have hate, great sadness, with shame for the ground that walked under him.
Oh?
Ha! Andrei Vrodnik!
Why is he so popular?
On the devil he is driven without horns. 6 women he has killed. 6 times he has insulted the police of Europe by refusing to confess. We have proof of the murders, but never can we prove the proof on him.
Yeah, sometimes it goes that way.
Hey, Never do we find the bodies of the six women. Only their money in the name of Andrea Vrodnik. My pardon.
Well, think nothing of it. You're just upset on you.
You're interested on him. Why? You go to Europe?
No, Vrodnik comes here.
Here? Here on San Francisco? He marries again?
So I'm told.
Oh, by all the means, you must prevent it. Go to him, brave man. You do the world a service. Make violence on him. Even do you hang for it, your name will live.
With those valiant words goading me on, I left. The farther I got into the caper, the more it looked as if Marsh's fears for Constance Pendleton were very real and very well-founded. When Constance opened the door of her hotel suite, I could see three trunks and a number of smaller pieces of luggage all locked and ready to be taken out.
Yes?
Hey, Constance Pendleton?
Yes?
I'm a detective. My name is Spade.
Detective? What do you want?
I want to talk to you about that Bluebeard you're going to marry.
Get out of here.
You listen, I'll talk, and then I'll get out of here. I just left the Bulgarian consulate. Vrodnik has been accused of the murders of six women in Europe. Each of them were wealthy. Each of them married him, and each time Vrodnik came into all their money.
Are you trying to blackmail me because of the lies about my fiancé's past? If you are, you're wasting your time.
Well, no matter what I'm doing, I'm wasting my time. But to put you straight, your sister hired me, and I am now resigning. She's worried about you, not me.
Then you should spend more time investigating your clients, Mr. Spade. You could have saved both of us some time. I have no sister. This is my wedding day. Goodbye, Mr. Spade.
As I left the room, I maintained the stern facial expression I reserved for moments of great shock. But once outside the door, I allowed myself to be carried on the wave of rage and embarrassment for just a minute, and I kicked over two potted palms. As I limped down the corridor, I was overtaken by none other than Marcia Hopkins.
Did you see her?
Let's talk about you first.
Did you stop the marriage?
Why did you really want that marriage stopped?
But I told you.
You told me you were her sister.
Oh.
She said she didn't have any sister.
All right, Sam, I did lie to you about that. But I'll tell you who I really am.
I don't want to know who you are. I don't ever want to know. All I want from you is my honestly earned fee and a brief but permanent goodbye.
Oh, no, Sam, please listen to me. We've got to save that girl. I have $500. That's all I have. Would it be enough?
What's your real name?
Marshall Brodnick. Yes, he's my husband. I've been married to him for 10 years. We've traveled all over Europe, and I never knew where the money was coming from. He left me at times for 2 weeks or a month, and then when he'd come back, there'd be more money. I just realized that that's when he must have been killing those poor women. And I know that's what he's going to do this time. I just can't stand it. You've got to protect her.
That should be easy. We'll let him get married and meet him at the door with a bigamy warrant.
Then you will see me through this.
I might.
Oh. In my bag, there's $500. Take it. If we can't stop the marriage, then don't let him out of your sight. Not even for a minute. He's a beast, Sam. A beast.
Marcia dropped me in front of the Beast's Hotel, and I climbed some fake marble steps to the second floor and knocked at his door. The man who opened it was heavy, handsome, in a swarthy, coarse sort of a way, and glowing conceit through two eyes, one monocled, one not.
You are facing Major Andrei Vrodnik, first Bulgarian horse. What want you?
You are facing Saul Fox of the law firm of Fox, Smedley, Van Dusen, and Grip.
You overwhelm yourself.
I came here to warn you. If you go through with a marriage to Constance Pendleton, you're going to find yourself tangled with civil law.
Warned. Andrei Vrodnik, who has personally led more saber charges than you have teeth in your skull.
Yes.
Who has personally split, slashed, and impaled on his own blade more men than you have fingers and toes. You warn me? What is this talk?
You're going to have a bigamy charge slapped on you 5 minutes after you slip her the ring. The warrant signed by Mrs. Marcia Vrodnik.
Bigamy? I laugh. This is not bigamy.
Marcia's your wife, isn't she?
That bigamy was committed when I married her. I had another wife then. You call yourself a lawyer, then you know that only the second marriage is bigamy. The ones following that are nothing but interludes.
Okay, Major, go ahead and have your interlude. I'm just warning you.
Oh, Speaks, we are being married on Redwood City from a justice of the peace 1 hour previous. Then we are sailing through the SS Lurine at midnight with our honeymoon. Already a droshkia waits for the baggage and luggage. Go now before I'm losing my temper. If you're ever in Calcutta, look me up. Da!
I could see the direct approach was getting me nowhere, so I decided to proceed by stealth. I waited outside the building, and when he left, I tailed him. He made four stops at a second-hand store, a hardware store, a surgical supply house, and an undertaker supply house. At these places, he purchased the following items: an oversized steamer trunk, black with brass fittings, a large ball of rope twine, two large lead sash weights, a set of surgical instruments, and at the fourth and final stop, the undertaking supply, he bought two items: a 20-foot length of rubber tubing and a pump. He returned to the second-hand store with his other purchases, put them inside the trunk, and ordered it sent up to Constance's hotel immediately, and thereupon betook himself to the same place. Marcia was waiting in the empty lobby when he went in. I crouched behind a pillar, turned up my hearing aid, and listened.
Did you get the thing?
Yeah. Now listen, my darling, we must work fast. Yes. As soon as the trunk arrives, before she has the chance to get to
yes,
the telephone...
Yes, Andre, but please, no cutting in the apartment.
As you wish, my darling. Now, you know what you have to do. While I'm getting her into the trunk, you'll change her clothes, put on her traveling dress, the hat with the...
What is it? What's the matter?
Nothing. Come, we must make haste.
They made haste to the elevators, and I made haste to the row of house telephone booths around the corner and called Constance's room.
Hello?
Mrs. Rodnick?
Speaking.
Listen, get out of that room right away. Don't take the elevator. Go down the stairs.
Who is this? What are you talking about?
I haven't got time to explain, and you haven't got time to listen. All those stories about your husband are true. He's going...
Hello? Are you still on the line?
My hand clawed out
Hello?
To the door handle, but I couldn't reach it. I felt as if the walls were closing in around me, and just
Can
before it got dark, I had the crazy notion that I was inside Brodnick's big black trunk with the brass fittings. I could still hear Constance's voice way off in the distance, somewhere in the direction of Calcutta. I tried to shout to her, to warn her, and then the lid closed over me. I shook my head, trying to get the bells out of it. Then I remembered where I was and what had happened. I was still wedged into the bottom of a phone booth where I'd slumped when Brodnick sapped me. I got out of there somehow and grabbed a taxi for the Embarcadero. The time was 11:55. The SS Lorraine was scheduled to sail at midnight. I was no sooner across it than they hauled up the gangplank and the ship started moving out of the berth. I didn't know where she was bound for and I didn't much care. I checked the passenger list and found that Major and Mrs. Andrea Brodnick were in stateroom 12, A deck. 1 minute later, I was hammering on the door of stateroom 12. The woman in Brodnick's stateroom was Constance, and she was not in a trunk.
I thought I told you to stop interfering in our affairs.
Yeah, your husband told me to, but I didn't like the way he did it.
Get out from here. Get out.
I see you got your trunk in here where it's handy. Doesn't it make the stateroom kind of crowded?
Why don't you give up, Mr. Spade? Two times already, you are twice a fool. Marcia has no money to pay you. Neither have I, even if she had the case. And believe me, she has not.
Oh, why do you even bother talking to him, Andre? Mr. Spade, will you go now, or will I have to call the steward and make a complaint against you?
I went. I still thought Marcia Hopkins was somewhere on that ship. I still didn't like the look of that trunk. I found the purser's office and went in. You looked at me as if you thought I was a stowaway, Mr. Fogg, and you were right.
I'll have to make arrangements for you to ride back with the pilot, Mr. Spade. You realize, of course, that you're subject to a fine.
Look, I don't want to do anything illegal. You know, it was just an impulsive thing. Couldn't I book a passage?
Well, there's a matter of your passport. We could arrange your visa and so on in San Pedro. We'll put in there in the morning.
Well, that's good enough. How much is the fare?
Well, let me see. That's $483.87, exclusive of tax.
Oh, hey, now, wait, I wasn't thinking of taking quite such an extensive voyage, you know. I just wanted to get a little sea air and... how much to Pedro?
Well, I'm afraid you don't understand, Mr. Spade. This is not a coastwise steamer. Our first official port of call is Calcutta.
Yeah, I know, but... Calcutta?
That's in India.
Well, don't you have something a little less expensive, like steerage or...
There is only one stateroom available, number 14A deck. Take it or leave it.
Okay, okay, Calcutta. After buying my passage to Calcutta, I had exactly 12 cents left. This I gave to the steward who showed me to my stateroom. He thanked me, kicked me in the shins, and left. Out on deck, a tall, red-nosed old gentleman in knickerbockers and a yachting cap was taking a turn around the deck. With him was a face I'd seen in the morning lineup down at the Hall of Justice a dozen times. He was a hotel thief by profession, name of Norman Gorman. He knew me, too, but he didn't give me a tumble. I fell into step with him.
Ah, sea air. Nothing like it, am I right?
Yeah, I guess it's okay, but there's so much of it.
Ah, brisk, bracing, salt spray. Nothing like it. Hey, Norman, my lad.
I hate it. I hate boats. Suppose there was a fire on board.
Fire? Oh, ridiculous. Is this your first voyage to the Orient?
Yeah.
The inscrutable East.
You've made this trip before?
Oh, yes, indeed. I've worked this line. Yes, indeed. I make this voyage very often. Business interest out in India. Tea, you know. Runs in my family. Sturgis's Golden Orient in the little yellow package. Ever tried it?
No, I never indulge.
Huh? Don't drink tea. That's ridiculous.
Commodore, I need a drink. I ain't happy. Suppose there was a fire on board here.
Ah. Well, let's all have a drink.
Yeah, suppose there was.
Shall we? Come on, I'll shut you to a drink, sir.
Not me, Commodore. I just remember this is Fire Prevention Week. The nearest fire alarm to Brodnick's stateroom was on the companionway leading to the A-deck corridor. It was a glass-enclosed box with a small hammer hanging on a chain. I broke the glass and turned the key. In 3 seconds flat, the entire population of A-Deck were shoving each other up the companionway, grabbing for life preservers as they went. The steward, hammered on the door of stateroom 12, opened it, shouted inside, and Brodnick and Constance reluctantly came out. I ducked inside, grabbed the handle of the trunk, and started dragging it. When I got it into my stateroom, I broke the lock and lifted the lid. It was Marsha, all right. There was just time to see that before the stateroom door flew open and the ship's officer stuck his head in.
The alarm?
Why, no, I didn't. What's wrong?
Never mind. That here, take this life preserver. Get going.
Okay,
now.
Okay. Don't touch me. It makes me nervous. Twenty minutes later, the captain announced to the mob up on the deck that it was a false alarm, and the passengers drifted back to their cabins. I tried to look casual as I unlocked my stateroom door and walked in. Then I stopped trying. The trunk was still there, but the lid was standing open, and it was empty. I went down to B deck and found the cabin occupied by Norm and the Commodore. That door was locked, so I kicked it in. You could still see the marks on her wrists and ankles with a cord. It was the girl I had seen in the trunk. It was Marsha Hopkins, and she was very much alive.
I'm sorry, I thought it was... Oh, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? You've got to help me, Sam.
Why should I help you?
He's crazy. They're both crazy.
It all depends on who's in the trunk, doesn't it, Marsha? When it was Constance, you didn't think he was so crazy.
Oh, don't you understand? I had to pretend that I'd help him. He was going to kill her right there in the hotel room. I told him it was too dangerous. If anybody looked in the trunk, it would be safer if she was in there alive. We finally agreed and said he'd wait until we got out to sea to kill her. And then he was...
Yeah,
going
I know
to...
about that.
Oh, the idea was so awful, I couldn't stand it. I started to scream, and then he stuffed the gag in my mouth and tied me up. He must have used chloroform or something, because the next thing I knew, I was in the trunk. And that little dark man was leaning over me. He and that old man with the knickers. They brought me here.
No, they pulled a switch on you. You were the fall gal all along.
Oh, you've got to believe me. It was the only way I could save her life. You're the only one I can turn to, Sam. That little thief and the old man, they'd deliver me dead if there was an extra $25 in it. Oh, say you'll help me, Sam. Please say it.
Well, when you ask me like that, what else can I say?
Oh, you do believe me, darling. You do believe me.
Come on, let's get out of here.
I'm sorry, Mr. Spade. Please step back inside. I promised my associate, Mr. Gorman, that I would not allow this young lady to risk her life by leaving this cabin.
You're getting into this cave at the wrong end, Commodore. It's wound up. They've bungled it. It's no good anymore.
You may be right. But you understand my position, sir. I can't take any chances. You've talked to Mr. Gorman?
Norm? Yeah, I talked to him.
He took you into his confidence?
Stop making with the pistol, Commodore. You don't know how to use it anyway.
Well, heavens, Norm, you're as white as a sheet. What is it?
Oh, he's sick. Go get a doctor.
Yes, indeed. Right away.
Listen, Spade. Take her with you. Get out of here. I don't want no part of this.
You got it bad, Norm.
I'm sick, I tell you. The way I had it sized, this was a clean caper, a snatch. I figure the dame here's an heiress or something. Maybe they drop her off in L.A., connect some ransom and go on. I figure there was enough for all of us. Oh, but that creep, that Rodnick, he's crazy. He's a regular Jack the Ripper.
Stop babbling, Norm. Tell me what happened, exactly what happened.
I get a sinking feeling in my stomach every time I think about it. Well, I go in, see? He's very smooth, very businesslike. He offers me a drink. I accept it. He mixes a couple of highballs for me and the dame, and then he starts talking. I guess she don't know all about it before this, because she gets just sick as I do. First I think he's kidding. Then he drags out this set of cutlery like a doctor uses to operate on people. Only he's got something else in mind. The porthole, you understand?
Oh, please. I don't want to hear anymore.
Being as it's you he has in mind, I don't blame you. My stomach.
Hey, Norm. Norm.
Oh. Here he is, the ship surgeon. Oh, dear me. What?
Stand away from him, please. Help me get him into the bunk.
Sure, Doctor.
Take the shade off that light, please. Yes.
He's dead, isn't he?
Oh, yes, he's dead, of course. Who poisoned him?
I didn't waste any time answering him. I grabbed him by the arm. Before he could object, I was pushing him up the companionway to A-deck. It was probably too late to save Constance's life, but she'd drunk the same poison, and I was pretty sure she had. But if I was going to nail him for the murder of Constance, I had to get there before the evidence vanished. We got there just in time. I don't need to tell you what we saw, and I'd rather not. Rodnick rose slowly to his feet, clicked his heels military fashion, and bowed very low.
The ship's surgeon. How opportune. Perhaps you could advise me, Doctor. After all, I am, in all honesty, even still, a mere amateur at this sort of thing.
After Rodnick had been taken into custody, we took another turn around the deck. It was daylight, and the ship was lying to off San Pedro. This time, the fresh air really felt good, and so did Marcia.
It's all over, Sam.
Yes, sweetheart, it's all over.
But not between us. Say it, Sam. Say it's not all over between us.
How can it be?
I knew it. I knew you felt the same way. All my life before, it's been like a terrible nightmare. Never really happened.
But it did happen, sweetheart.
Oh, but you can forget it, darling, can't you? Please forget it.
I'd like to, Marcia. I really would.
Hold me close, Sam. Never let me go.
You're beautiful.
Is that all, Sam? Nothing else?
Yeah. Lots else. That's why I think we better say goodbye right now. Because when I feel like this, I get foolish. And if I get foolish with you, I'm likely to wake up in a trunk someplace. And that, Mr. Fogg, is the true account of the Calcutta trunk caper. It was my voyage was interrupted through no fault of my own. I trust you will advise your company to refund my passage minus the one-way trip to San Pedro. Period and a report.
Sam Spade is played by Howard Duck.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.